Well, thank you, Mr. Kester, and good morning, everyone.
The lion. The lion is considered to be the king of the jungle. It's also considered to be the king of beasts, and with good reason. The lion is a symbol of authority, of strength, of bravery, of valor, and of natural leadership. It is strong, naturally dominant, superior, and often associated with royalty. And because of these characteristics, throughout history, many nations and cultures have incorporated the lion into their heraldry and coats of arms. The face of the lion is one of the most recognized in human culture. The lion is the second largest living feline species. Only the tiger is larger. In fact, lions and tigers are so similar genetically that without their coats, it can be difficult to tell them apart. The average lifespan of a lion is about 13 to 14 years, the oldest one on record being 29 years old, according to the website lions.org. And yes, they do have their own website, apparently. Male lions, however, usually live to be about 10 years of age, primarily because of injuries sustained from continually fighting, usually with other males for dominance. They're very territorial. Depending on the gender and the species, lions can weigh between 115 and 250 kilograms, which is about 250 to about 550 pounds. Adult male stands about 1.2 meters at the shoulder, about 4 feet tall. Their bodies are up to about 8 feet long, 2.5 meters, with their tails adding about another meter or 3 feet to their length. And they are, I believe, the only feline species with a tufted tail as well. The eyesight of a lion is 5 times better than a human being. And they can hear prey from a distance of about a mile away. Their sense of smell is also very acute. They can smell prey, can estimate how long it has been in a particular area. The famous roar of a lion can be heard for up to 5 miles away. Of all the members of the cat family, the lion's roar is the loudest. It is the only member of the cat family to live in groups called prides. A pride will generally consist of about 15 lions, although some have had as many as 40. Most of the members of the pride are female, and for the most part, all related to one another. The lion is a predator by nature. They're carnivores, meaning they eat meat that they kill. But they're also scavengers. Up to about half of what they eat is through scavenging. It is interesting to note that while the female does most of the hunting, while the male looks after the cubs. Hunting is usually done around dawn. A single lion will kill about 15 large animals in a single year. Their hunting technique is rather interesting. It can be quite effective. It usually involves several lionesses working as a team. They usually hunt as a group. They spread out, surrounding their potential prey, and approach from different directions. Using any available cover, such as tall grass, things like that, they make a final charge, closing in on the nearest individual. So the element of surprise is vital for a lion's hunting success. And even though lions can reach a top speed of about 60 kilometers an hour, roughly 35 miles per hour or so, they can only do that for a short distance, and as a result, their prey is often able to outrun them. And part of the reason for the short bursts of speed is the size of a lion's heart. In females, it is just over 0.5% of their body weight. The male lions have smaller hearts. It's less than 0.5% of their body weight. Only about 1 in 6 stalks is successful for a lion. But when they do make a strike, they kill larger animals by strangulation. They bite down with 650 to 700 pounds of force on the throat of the prey, thus asphyxiating their prey. The strength of their forepaws is enough to break the back of a zebra. And since kills are generally few and far between, lions will usually gorge on up to about 90 pounds of food in a single meal. So there's no such thing as three square meals a day when you're a lion. And even though the female is the predominant hunter, the male will be the first to eat of the kill. Male lions are unique in that they are the only members of the cat family to have a mane. And the thicker and darker the mane, the healthier the lion is. The mane gives the appearance of power and of strength. The lion is, without a doubt, a very powerful beast. Many references can be found in the Bible to the lion. Over 150 verses make reference to the lion. So today we'll look at one very powerful example. It involves a lion, more than one actually. It is a story of faith and courage in the face of almost certain death. It is a story of one party succumbing to peer pressure and another party not giving in, not giving up, but rather standing by his convictions and his beliefs and his subsequent deliverance. We'll see what we can learn from the story of Daniel and the lion's den. Now, on the surface, this is a feel-good story. Yes, it is a story of triumph of good over evil, but it is also much deeper than that. And yet, many will discount the story, saying that it is one of the examples in the Bible that's filled with allegory and hyperbole, and the Bible is filled with violence and evil and pointless stories. And unfortunately, that is a sad commentary in our society today. Many will try to discount the power of God, and thus will minimize God. In this day and age, when God is consistently and constantly, persistently being pushed out of the picture, where Christians are portrayed as being awed and often ridiculed, what can we learn from the example of Daniel? Let's take a deeper look into this very powerful example of faith, courage, and standing up for your beliefs. As we go through the story, we cannot help but notice similarities to other famous examples of faith and courage in the Bible. Some examples that might come to mind immediately include Joseph in the book of Genesis, and Stephen in the book of Acts, as well as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who were also cited in the book of Daniel. In Daniel chapter 5, it is noted that King Belshazzar, who succeeded King Nebuchadnezzar, saw the handwriting on the wall, literally. The writing was such that none of the king's advisors could interpret it. But it foretold the fall of Babylon, the most powerful kingdom in the world up to that time. And it was actually the queen who suggested there was one person who could tell the meaning of the writing on the wall. That one person was Daniel, and he was brought before King Belshazzar. Well, bear in mind that Daniel was not a young man by this point in his life. He was in his 80s, and he had accumulated a lot of life experience. But through God, he properly told the king what the words meant, and as a reward for doing so, he was given a very high position of authority within the government. And of course, this is similar to the story of Joseph back in the book of Genesis. But then something happened. King Belshazzar was assassinated, and a new king took over the throne. And his name was Darius. And as the last verse in Daniel 5 states, he was in his early 60s at the time. So about 20 years or so younger than Daniel was. So this little bit of background, let's look at the story of Daniel and how he ended up in the lion's den, and how God protected him. The story takes place in Daniel chapter 6. In the first few verses, we see the position of authority that Daniel was given. In verse 1, King Darius proclaimed 120 satraps, or princes, oversee his kingdom. They were the protectors of the realm. And over those princes, the king had three presidents, as it were. And Daniel was one of them. The king had set up a system of checks and balances, in effect. The idea was to make it difficult for the king to be defrauded of his wealth. Now, although his motives might have been altruistic, nevertheless, it is a good principle to live by, to have checks and balances in place. Daniel 6, verse 3 brings out some interesting points about Daniel and his character. So let's start there. Daniel chapter 6 and verse 3. Daniel chapter 6, verse 3. Then this Daniel was made overseer of the presidents and satraps, because an excellent spirit was in him, and the king was planning to set him over all the kingdom. So not only was Daniel one of the three people over the princes, he was number one, in effect. So why was he chosen for this position? Well, a great deal of the answer can be found in those words, because an excellent spirit was in him. In the previous chapter, chapter 5, Daniel was recognized by the queen for that very quality as well. And thus she recommended King Belshazzar talk to Daniel about the writing on the wall. Daniel was noticed in large part because God was with him. His character was such that he could be trusted with the power that he was given. Daniel was different for a number of reasons. God was working with him. That's a major factor. And furthermore, he was neither Mede or Persian. And that will come into play later on. His qualifications for the position he held included his familiarity with the Babylonian government, as well as his own life experiences. Remember, he was in his 80s at this time. So it soon became apparent that Daniel was different. Notice what happened in verse 4. Daniel chapter 6. Then the presidents and rulers sought to find occasion against Daniel concerning the kingdom. So perhaps those who were working with Daniel felt threatened by Daniel. They might not have liked the fact that Daniel was different. There was something different about Daniel. What made Daniel different was quite noticeable. And basically, it comes down to two things: that he was good, or they were evil. That was the primary difference. It's quite possible that others were jealous of Daniel's position, especially since he was an outsider. He was neither a Mede nor a Persian. Daniel's character was in contrast to those around him, and those around him realized that. They didn't like it at all. He was on a much different level, spiritually speaking, than they were, on a much higher plane. And there's a growing faction who resented Daniel and what he stood for, because Daniel stood out from the crowd. The fact that Daniel was very qualified for the position didn't seem to matter to those of his detractors. Some might have felt that he didn't deserve that position that he had. It's the idea that, well, that job should have been mine, that comes into play. And perhaps we've experienced something similar ourselves. So why did Daniel get that position? Notice the last part of verse 4, Daniel 6, verse 4. But they could find no occasion or fault, because he was faithful. Neither was there any error or fault found in him. So Daniel had a stellar reputation. It was so good that even his enemies could not find anything bad about him. Does this apply to you and to me individually? Well, obviously no one is perfect. But what kind of character do we have? Do we have character similar to what Daniel had? Are we faithful? Is there any error or fault found in us? Now, as is often the case, those trying to find fault won't give up. still keep digging. It's almost like an obsession. Try to get some dirt on a particular person and then use that to bring him or her down. That's nothing new. Let's look at politics today. In Daniel's case, his detractors could not find anything that could be used against him. And since Daniel had lived a long time, he was in his 80s by this time, those who were against him might have thought, well, there has to be something that he did way back when that they could use against Daniel, and that they could use to bring Daniel down to their level or lower. Notice verse 5. Daniel 6, verse 5. Then these men said, "We shall not find any occasion against this Daniel unless we find it against him concerning the law of God." Here's an idea. Let's use his religion against him since we can't find anything else. Almost smacks of desperation. But their dislike for Daniel was, and by extension to God, was so intense that they conspired to create a new law that would be contrary to Daniel's beliefs and thus to God's law. Those who were against Daniel approached the king with an idea for this new law. In verse 7, they told the king, "All the presidents of the kingdom, the prefects, the satraps, and the officials and the governors had planned together to establish a royal law and to make a strong ban that whoever shall ask a petition of any god or man for 30 days except from you, O king, he shall be thrown into the den of lions." Now notice that those who came to the king told him all the presidents of the kingdom, which implied that Daniel had also given his consent to this proposed law, a law that would give the king ultimate authority. In other words, nothing could be done without the king's authorization or consent for a period of 30 days. Now King Darius should have noticed, and perhaps he did, but he should have noticed that Daniel was not present at that meeting with the other presidents. So perhaps he should have been somewhat suspicious that Daniel would seemingly be okay with this new law. On the other hand, he had no apparent or compelling reason not to believe that those who met with him would misrepresent Daniel. Furthermore, it was only a temporary measure. It was to last only 30 days, so perhaps he found some solace in that as well. But those who wanted this new law put into effect persisted. And without consulting with Daniel, the king gave in. In effect, he gave in to peer pressure and signed that proposal into law, a law that was irrevocable, as verse 8 states. Daniel 6, verse 8, "Now, O king, establish the ban and sign the writing, so that it may not be changed according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which cannot be changed." The Nelson Study Bible states that once a royal decree had been issued, it could not be revoked, even by the king himself. It remained in force until its time of expiration. The practice of creating an unchangeable law may follow from the idea that changing a decree was an admission that it had been faulty. So that's from the Nelson Study Bible notes on verse 8. So in other words, changing or revoking a law that was put into effect could be seen as a sign of weakness. That would not be good for the person in charge, in this case, the king. He would be perceived as being weak. So King Darius was in the middle of a very difficult situation. One can imagine that, you know, he was being pressured into signing that law immediately. But he might have had some reservations about it. And since Daniel was not present, he could not readily consult with him. Perhaps the king felt that he was being forced into signing this law, and in effect he was. And while the law could not be revoked, perhaps the king found some consolation in the fact that this law was only temporary. It was only going to last 30 days. But in any event, the king signed the law, as verse 9 states. Notice what happened next. Verse 10, Daniel 6. When he had learned that the document was signed, Daniel went to his house. And his windows were open in his room toward Jerusalem. And he kneeled on his knees 3 times a day and prayed, and gave thanks before his God as he did before. So the fact that he went back to his house indicated he was not part of those meetings. And once he learned about that decree being signed into law, then he went home. Daniel later found out that he'd been misrepresented and that the new law was put into effect. So notice what he did. He went home. What did he do when he got home? He prayed. He prayed 3 times a day, as he usually did, and he gave thanks to God. So in spite of his predicament, he thanked God. Is that something we do? When we're faced with a trial or a potential problem in our lives, what do we do? Well, obviously, we should be praying as Daniel did. But rather than focusing on our problem, why not be thankful to God for what he has done in our lives? Why not be thankful for the things that God has given to us? And there are so many things to be thankful for. You start making a list. And that's what Daniel did. His prayers didn't immediately start with his problems. But rather, he began his prayers by focusing on God and being thankful to God for what he had done. Another thing to note about this verse. It states that Daniel prayed with his windows open toward Jerusalem. Why was that? Well, perhaps it was to serve as a continual witness of God to the pagan empire and as an example to the Jews in captivity to be bold in their devotion to God and their faith in his promise of future return to the Holy Land, according to the UCG Bible commentary on this chapter. Furthermore, perhaps Daniel felt that it was his duty as one of those in authority to be an example and a witness to others. Daniel's example would be visible whether it was a good example or a bad example. Either way, it would be noticed. Another possibility is that if Daniel had ceased praying to God, it could be seen as an admission that Daniel could be dissuaded from worshiping God. That he could compromise his beliefs. That perception was out there. And that too would have been a witness to others, although that would have been the wrong kind of witness and example. So more than ever before, Daniel needed to be close to God. He needed God more than ever. And through prayer, he drew the strength to face the challenge that lay before him. Those same people who conspired against Daniel found him praying before God, which was in direct contravention to the new law that they had in effect forced the king to proclaim. So what did they do? They went to the king with that information. And verse 13, and they tried to turn the tables somewhat. Verse 13 of Daniel 6. Then they answered and said before the king, Daniel, who is of the exiled sons of Judah, has not respected you, O king, nor the ban that you have signed, but makes his prayer 3 times a day. Notice how they mention that Daniel was of the exiled sons of Judah, a reminder that he was not one of the Medes and Persians. But also notice how they told the king that he disrespected him by not obeying the law that the king himself had just proclaimed. Other translations use the phrase that he did not pay attention to the king's law. He ignored it, in a sense. Notice the king's reaction in verse 14. The king had a sense of buyer's remorse, in a sense. Then the king, when he heard the word, was very much displeased with himself. And he set his heart on Daniel to deliver him. And he labored until sundown to deliver him. So it seems that he regretted putting that law into effect. But he knew that he had been used and manipulated. He knew that Daniel was special and regretted not having consulted with him directly. But by this time, it was a moot point. The law could not be changed at that point. There was nothing the king could do to change the law or to revoke it. That greatly bothered the king, and he decided to do what he could to help Daniel. Knowing that he did the wrong thing and then trying to make it right, the king started thinking about ways to spare Daniel. Some of those ideas would be more rational than others. Perhaps he thought of overfeeding the lions so they wouldn't be interested in tearing Daniel to pieces. He might have thought about giving Daniel armor to protect himself. But if he did those things, however, the king could be accused of subterfuge, thus undermining the authority of the law. He could be accused of interference and would have to face the consequences for those actions. So in the end, the king knew that the only way for Daniel to be spared was through a miracle. In the meantime, though, the king had to uphold the law, even though he knew it was a bad law. Verse 16. Then the king commanded, and they brought Daniel and threw him into the lion's den. The king answered and said to Daniel, "Your God, whom you always serve, will deliver you." It's interesting to note the faith that the king had, even. He knew that God would deliver Daniel, one way or the other. It's likely King Darius was aware of three of Daniel's friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, were saved from King Nebuchadnezzar's fiery furnace. In verse 17, the drama continues. Verse 17 of Daniel 6, and a stone was brought and laid on the mouth of the den. And the king sealed it with his own signet and with the signet of his lords, that the purpose might not be changed concerning Daniel. So the king apparently accompanied Daniel down to the lion's den. A stone would have had to be large enough and heavy enough that it could not easily be moved to block the opening. Furthermore, the stone had to be sealed with the signet of the king. In other words, it was sealed with the seal of the king. Furthermore, it was probably sealed with wax or clay. For the same reason that letters were sealed with wax, any attempt to open them would be immediately visible. And to break the seal of the king was a serious offense. And so it was with the stone. It was sealed so that any attempts to tamper with it would be visible almost immediately. The size of the stone precluded Daniel from escaping from within the den, nor could he easily be rescued from without. Any attempt to do so would have broken the seal as well. Now, sometimes we imagine that Daniel was a young man, as David was when he killed the lion that tried to kill one of his father's lambs in 1 Samuel 17. But Daniel was in his 80s at this point in his life. And notice the effect of this whole... And the king went to his palace and spent the night fasting. And diversions were not brought before him, and his sleep fled from him. Those diversions were music. Music can be very soothing to listen to. But the king could not be entertained. He spent a sleepless night thinking about Daniel and what he had done. Now, it's unclear why he fasted. It does state that he did fast, spent the night fasting. But it's unclear why he fasted. And perhaps it was for the right reason, to seek God. But also, might have been a little more selfish than that. Could be that the king thought fasting was a form of penance. Or it could simply be that he did not eat because he was upset. But whatever the reason, the king did not eat that night. You can kind of imagine the tension that he was facing during the night. He wasn't unable to sleep as well. So early the next morning, the king rushed to the den to learn of Daniel's fate. Probably feared the worst, but hoped for the best. When he came to the den, verse 20 of Daniel 6, so the king went down to the den. When he came to the den, he cried with a grieved voice to Daniel. The king spoke and said to Daniel, "O Daniel, servant of the living God, is your God, whom you always serve, able to deliver you from the lions?" So King Darius recognized that God had worked with Daniel. Daniel's example of obedience, of faith and faithfulness, and his unwavering service to God were noticed. The king acknowledged that God was first and foremost in Daniel's life. Begs the question, is God first and foremost in our lives as well? We can imagine the anticipation in the king's voice. Would he get a reply? Or would there be silence? The answer is found in verse 21. Then Daniel said to the king, O king, live forever. Now those words were not a form of worship. Rather, it was a standard greeting at the time. But there could also be some truth in that statement. The king could live forever if he was called by the same God who saved Daniel from certain death, and a very unpleasant one at that. So how was Daniel able to survive in the lion's den? Well, verse 22. My God has sent his angel and shut the lions' mouths, and they have not hurt me because before him purity or innocence was found in me. And also before you, O king, I have done no harm. So through a miracle, the lions' mouths were shut. The lesson is we must never minimize the power of God. Daniel would have certainly been killed if God had not delivered him. And it's kind of easy to read over this verse. But we have to remember the nature of lions. As I described earlier, some of the characteristics of lions. They're carnivores. They eat meat. They're very strong, having the ability to break the back of a zebra with their forepaws. They're not gentle animals. They're not domestic house cats. Even those who are trained to work with lions have found themselves in trouble from time to time. But it was easy for God to change the nature of the lions in the den. We must never underestimate that power of God. And Daniel, furthermore, was innocent, as we just read. He was innocent before God, and he was innocent before the king. He did nothing to deserve the way that he was treated. And the king also realized that. Verse 23. Then the king was exceedingly glad for him and commanded that they should take Daniel up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no kind of hurt was found on him because he trusted in his God. So the king was ecstatic and very much relieved that Daniel was alive. But not only alive, but notice that Daniel was not hurt physically in any way. And again, that is an indication of the protection that God afforded Daniel. God was pleased with Daniel's faith, and that spared him. He knew that if God had not spared him, Daniel would be dead. But God did deliver him, and that too was noticed by all those who were involved. This was a very powerful witness to others. Do we have that kind of faith? Do we have that kind of trust in God when we're faced with a very serious trial, as Daniel was, literally a life and death trial? What kind of faith do we have? What kind of trust in God do we have? We can kind of imagine what Daniel was going through, and it's highly unlikely that he would have taunted the lions. After all, that could be conceived as being as tempting God. But we're left to wonder what Daniel's actions were in the den. Did he keep his distance? Did he stay at the opposite end of the den where the lions were? Was he curious about these animals? He was quite possibly in awe of them, especially since they were in effect muzzled through a miracle of God. But only Daniel knows the answers to those questions. But nonetheless, what would we do if we found ourselves in a similar situation? Now, granted, our society has advanced, quote-unquote, since those days, and we no longer throw people into the lion's dens. But nevertheless, we should ask ourselves, what would I do? How would I react? Would my example be as good as Daniel's? Would I have the faith to keep obeying God under extreme duress? Continuing with the story, we see just how much God had changed the nature of the lions just for Daniel and him alone. Verse 24. The king was very ecstatic about the fact that Daniel was A, alive, and B, unhurt. Verse 24. And the king commanded, and they brought those men who had accused Daniel, and they threw them into the lion's den, them, their sons, and their wives. And the lions overpowered them and broke all their bones in pieces before they came to the bottom of the den. So the lions reverted back to their true nature. The king's reaction to the mistreatment of Daniel was evident. And because they misled the king by implying that Daniel had given his approval to the decree back in verse 7, the king used his authority to punish those involved. Those people conspired to take one of the king's most trusted advisors out of the picture, and they were dealt with accordingly. So God does look after us in every circumstance, does take care of us. Now, was that harsh punishment to throw all those people into the den? Well, perhaps, but it shows that God does take care of those who obey him. Furthermore, King Darius might have mitigated any revenge against him by taking the families of those involved out of the picture as well. This, of course, flies in the face of Deuteronomy 24, verse 16, where God says that the fathers should not be put to death for their children and vice versa. Each is to die for his own sin. But pagan kings, including Darius, had no regard for Mosaic law. However, because of Daniel's example, King Darius invoked a new law that was to glorify the great God. Verse 26 of Daniel 6. I make a decree that in all the domain of my kingdom there shall be trembling and fear before the God of Daniel, for he is the living God and endures forever, and his kingdom is that which shall not be destroyed, and his rule shall be to the end. As kings go, Darius was certainly not the worst. He recognized, as did his predecessor, King Nebuchadnezzar, that there was an almighty, powerful God who is to be honored and obeyed. He continued, the king, in verse 27, he delivers and rescues, and he works signs and wonders in the heavens and in earth. He who has delivered Daniel from the power of the lions. The final verse of this chapter states that Daniel was blessed during the remainder of King Darius' reign, verse 28. And as Daniel was blessed in the reign of Darius and in the reign of Cyrus the Persian. Cyrus was Darius' successor and his nephew. And throughout the transition between the two kings, Daniel was blessed by God. Daniel's example brings another reference to lions found in the Bible. 1 Peter 5, verse 8. 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 8. First Peter 5, verse 8. Be sober or be sensible and vigilant, because the adversary, the devil, walks about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. Peter tells us to be aware, to be watchful. Recognize the power of the lion as well. And Satan, of course, is likened to the lion, and vice versa. Walks about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. That's just the nature of the lion. They roar and they look for something that they can devour. And Satan will do the same thing. So we need to be on guard against Satan, because like a lion, Satan will tear us apart if we're not careful. It's just part of the nature of the lion. They're not playful animals. Lions are fierce and determined animals, and they don't give up easily, and they're predatory. So one can make the analogy that those who plotted against Daniel were Satan personified. They wanted to tear Daniel apart, and they were determined to do so. Like lions, they did not give up in their quest. They persisted until the very end. But because Daniel chose to be close to God, he was spared. It was a choice that Daniel made. He wanted to be close to God, and he was. And like Daniel, we too will be spared if we are close to God. So what can we learn from Daniel's powerful example of faith, obedience, and deliverance? Daniel was selected for a high position in the government at the time because he was able to tell King Belshazzar what the writing on the wall meant. No one else was able to do that. It was actually the queen who suggested that Daniel be consulted, in part, great part, because an excellent spirit was found in him. Does that apply to us? Are we filled with an excellent spirit? Daniel was in his 80s at this time. He had a lot of life experience. He followed God. He trusted God. He had utmost faith in God. We read that no fault was found in Daniel. Again, does that apply to us? Can others find fault with us and then use that against us? How closely do we follow God? How much do we trust God? How much faith do we have? But because no fault or error was found in Daniel, his peers felt insecure. And they were jealous of Daniel, an outsider who was placed in such a high position of authority. How would we react if someone conspired against us? And perhaps this has happened in the past. Would we give in? Or would we stand up? In Daniel's case, there were those who conspired against him. Rather than giving in, he stood up. No matter what he did, it would have been noticed. If he had given in or if he had stood up. So Daniel did the right thing when he found out about the new law, a law that he was not consulted about. And yet, those who wanted this law implied to the king that Daniel had in fact given his agreement or his consent. But that was not the case. Daniel's example of praying is a powerful one. When we're faced with challenges, what do we do? Well, obviously, we should be praying to God, not just in times of when we're faced with challenges, but at all times. We need to be close to God. But when we're faced with challenges, what do we do? Like Daniel, we should be praying. But not only that, but praying with an attitude of thankfulness. So rather than focusing on our problems immediately, why not be thankful for what God has given to us? And if we make a list, that list can get very long very quickly. We think about it. Now, King Darius, on the other hand, should not have acted so hastily to put that law into effect. And he should have consulted with Daniel first. It's all water under the bridge, so to speak. And Daniel could have become angry about how he was being singled out. But there's absolutely no evidence of that taking place. Instead, he focused even more on God and relied more on God to deliver him. The king was remorseful about his actions, and his deep concern for Daniel was evident. And then Daniel nonetheless found himself in the den of lions facing certain death. Had he not been delivered? How would we have reacted in that situation? If we were in Daniel's shoes or Daniel's sandals, how would we have reacted? What would we have done? What would our level of faith be? Would we have enough trust in God to deliver us? Daniel certainly did. The result is that he came out of the den completely unscathed, much to the relief of the king. This is an example of the power of God. Let's never minimize that power. Daniel's faith was exemplary, so much so that the king put to death those who conspired against him and against Daniel. Daniel's example of obedience under duress is also a powerful example and lesson. What about us? What is our level of obedience under duress? Do we have the faith to make it through the trials we face? Remember, God won't give us something we cannot bear. And in the grand scheme of things, however, can we really compare our trials with the one that Daniel faced? But Daniel was blessed for his obedience and his faith in God. His faith and obedience were an example to others, and we too can learn from that example. The story of Daniel in the lion's den is a powerful one. So let's take these lessons to heart, and let's strive to have Daniel-like character.